So let's get going then. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the ALAC monthly conference call on Tuesday, the 22nd January 2013. The time is 15:01 UTC. So the first thing that we are going to have on our agenda is to have the roll call, please.
Yes, welcome to everyone. On today's ALAC call, we have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Dave Anand-Tilak-Singh, Yao B. Atuhun, Carlton Samuels, Tijani Benjema, Kitty Atunsanmi, Evan Leibovich, Alan Greenberg, Eduardo Diaz, and Rinali Abdul-Rahim will be a little late on this call. We also have Julie Hammer, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Maureen Hilliard, Oksana Pliotko, Ron Sherwood, Winthrop Hugh, Uriel Lantipuro, and Siva Mutsami. On the Spanish channel, we have Natalia Enciso. Nobody on the French channel so far. Apologies noted from Jean-Jacques Subrona, Holly Rage, Sandra Hoferichter, Arnold Trick, Fatimata Seyesila, and José Arce. From staff, we have Matt Ashtiani, Heidi Ulrich, Sylvia Vivanco, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Our interpreters today on the Spanish channel are Sabrina and Veronica. And on the French channel, we have Claire and Camilla. If I could also remind everyone to please state their names when speaking for transcript purposes, and also to allow the interpreters to identify on the other language channel, and also to speak at a reasonable speed to allow for accurate interpretation. Also, if you are on the phone bridge as well as on the Adobe Connect room, please do remember to mute your speakers as well as your microphone. Thank you. Over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Gisela. And whilst you were reading through the roll call, I noticed a few people that have arrived as well. I note in the chat that Fatima Cambronero mentioned she is on the Spanish channel as well. Sebastian Bachelet is online too. And I think that a couple other people have arrived. I gather, will you track them? Have I lost Gisela?
We'll note that. Okay. Heidi, Olivier, we'll note that. And I believe Aubrey joined. So we'll note all of the people.
You'll note it. Yeah, Gisela appears to have dropped or is unable to speak. Anyway, thank you. Welcome, everybody, and welcome to this new year of great work that we're going to have to do. I hope you all had a very good break during the holidays. And I hope you're all full of energy to get going and to get involved more in many of our activities. And my goodness, do we have a lot more activities that are all going on simultaneously and a lot of volunteers required. The first thing we're going to do is the adoption of the agenda and a call for any other business or other amendments. On the agenda, it says that it will take 23 minutes. I hope it will take less time than that. And I therefore open the floor. Okay, I hear no one running up, down, or jumping for any additional business. Then we can move on. That's great. We've won quite a few minutes from those 23. And we can go directly to the review of the action items from our last meeting last year, the 20th of December 2012 ALAC meeting. So I invite you all over to that page. And you will notice that it has both long-term goals and the in-progress goals and open action items. There are several recently closed action items. I'm not going to... Well, I could read through them. Yeah, let's just read through them for the record. First one is Olivier to send the ALAC démarche to ICANN, to the ICANN board chair, copying Fadi Shahadi in the chair of the PPC. Jean-Jacques Sabana has very kindly added a few lines. This was complete discussion with regards to visa issues and the problems that many of our members had to reach Toronto. There has been some feedback so far with regards to it, but nothing official yet, letting us know how the PPC would be taking part in any work regarding the obtaining of visas, etc. The next three are to contact John Curran and, in fact, also Louis Lee on three different statements to ask if a statement was necessary. That I did not receive an answer, so if it would no answer, I guess it's not that important. So these three did not have a statement drafted. The next action item is Heidi and staff to help organize an at-large conference call on the World Conference on Information, International Telecommunication Subject, the WCIT, that has taken place, and we will be quickly speaking about this later on in this call. Finally, Sylvia Vivanco is to work with the Secretariat to send the information on the new GTLD applications and the filing of objections directly to the at-large structures. That one, I think that we will also be touching on shortly in our call. So then we can just look at the newly assigned action items. The first one is to do with myself drafting a statement on my experiences at the World Conference on International Telecommunications. Unfortunately, that's still not finalized. It's still not finished. I'm working on it. It should be another week or so until I finish it. And the one after that is Evan Leibovich and Jean-Jacques Subrenat to lead the Future Challenges Working Group on a more extensive statement on the issues raised at the World Conference on International Telecommunications as compared to the first statement. So without the first one being finalized, the next one is still pending as well. Any questions or comments? Now, if I could just add, there has already been an XCOM call taking place earlier on, which I believe was last week. And in that, there was an additional action item, which was to extend not only the future work that would take place in at large, not to have it only dealt with by the Future Challenges Working Group, but also the ALAC itself. There are several tracks which I think we are going to have to follow, from capacity building on one side to outreach on the other side, but also what does it mean for our community to be active, and what does it mean for the multi-stakeholder model? How do we interact with all of this? Okay, so I guess we can then, without any additional comments, we can move to the review of the current at-large structure applications. And I will ask Matt to go through these, please. Matt, you have the floor. Matt Ashtiani, we cannot hear you at the moment.
Olivia, this is Heidi. Okay. May I go ahead and do that format?
Yes, go ahead, yes. Heidi. You seem to have staff that is mute today.
Yes. It's my plan.
Wow.
So, no, I'm kidding.
Great bottom-up. Fantastic. We believe you. Go ahead, Heidi.
I'm wondering where everyone is. That's where I'm wondering. Okay. Recently accredited ALSs, we have Association de Escribiano del Uruguay, apologies for my Spanish, and I don't know why that says Uralo, that should be LACRALO, Internet Society Philippine chapter, that is in APRALO, and .HIV VAT ALS is in Uralo, And again, just to point out that with those three, we have 151 ALSs, so a big milestone of over 150 has been reached. So congratulations to everyone, and several more are in line. So organizations that are currently applying RAID services in AFRALO, AFRALO actually asked that they're going to suggest that organization consider applying to the business constituency as it is a business organization. The University Community Partnership for Social Action Research, that is going to go back to that applicant and ask some questions, as there were a lot of questions on the NARALO list regarding their governance, regarding their membership, et cetera. The Armenian Association for the Disabled Unit, that is awaiting regional advice from AP RALO. University of Library Studies and Information Technologies, that is in Uralo, and ALAC will begin voting shortly on that application. And the Swiss Privacy Foundation, that actually has withdrawn, that organization has withdrawn its application given some issues with the due diligence process that is, they're actually posted, and that they had some concern about that. And that's all of you.
Thank you very much, Heidi. And I note I note a few names in the list of participants on the Adobe Connect at the moment, including Winthrop Yu from the Internet Society Philippines chapter, if I understand correctly. Winthrop, are you there?
Yes, good evening, everyone.
Welcome. It's always great to have new members joining on the ALAC call as guests, and I think it's a great thing. I hope that you have an interesting couple of hours or hour and a half. And just to let you know that the calls are open to everyone. So if you have any questions, you're very welcome to put your hand up on the Adobe page and. Basically ask questions and take part in the discussion. Do you have a few words for us?
Yes, we're glad to be a part of the ICANN at large, and we hope to participate more actively once we get up to speed. Thank you for having us participate.
Great, thank you very much for attending. Yaovi Asahun, you have your hand up. Yaovi, you have the floor.
Thank you. Can you hear me, please?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yaovi speaking. I have a general comment, and this is regarding the at-large structures. It is a general comment, and I want to maybe... think about the criteria about the structure that can be a large structure. Like, I have to give a general example. If we have a business organization who want to be member or want to become a large structure, sometimes it can be very difficult because primarily we would like to have these structures to be constituted by end users. If I take a case of a university, for example, we have thousands of students, they are users. But if we have association of students, that can be something different. But if you have a university, that is an organization that would like to be a member of at-large structure. So I just want us to think about it. Maybe I'm wrong, but from some time I'm wondering myself, who should we receive asset at last structure? This is just a general comment so that we can all go back and think seriously about the organization that could be member or at last structure. I can be wrong. This is why I'm saying that I have to go back also and read, and maybe I'm wrong. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Yao. And I note that Tijani has put his hand up. Tijani Benjamin, you have the floor.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Go ahead, we can hear you.
I think that
an application for ALS is acceptable if it is not a commercial entity. At the end, everyone is end user. Everyone. A student is end user, a teacher is end user, so any university or any association of, I don't know, students, etc., they are all users, and they can be ALSs. But if they are for-profit organization, we cannot accept them, because there will be, we have to think about the public interest, and we are defending the public interest. So any end user without interest, without financial interest, is eligible to be an ALS. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. And there is, strictly speaking, the ALS membership does not mention that the organization should be non-commercial as such, but it is left to the appreciation of each RALO, and I do know of some applications that have not been given a green light due to the fact that they were too commercial in nature. But you are absolutely right that universities or student associations might be eligible. I see Carlton has put his hand up. Go ahead, Carlton.
Thank you, Olivia. This is Carlton for the record. I wanted to add to what Tijan was saying, that there's always been a concern for associations or groupings that are funded by the government. And at one point it was a blanket opposition to that. And some of us have pointed out, and there have been deliberations on this in the ELAC, that, for example, Students Association universities in our part of the world, most all of them, it's changing now, get some kind of public support. So we couldn't use the fact that they were financed in part by the government as a sole determinant of them not being accorded ALS status. I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carlton. And next is Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, thank you. I think we need to highlight what the rules are, because they're buried so deep in the in the website that they're almost impossible to find. But, you know, we had long discussions when these rules were being established, and we went through all the iterations that we want to allow, we don't want to allow certain things, and came to the realization that in many parts of the world, things that in North America might be completely ridiculous in looking at a user organization, in other parts of the world, that's the norm. So government involvement, commercial involvement, all of those are not disallowed as long as the organization is controlled by users from that region. You know, there's probably some other extraneous things, but, you know, that's the core part of it. And we can't differentiate, because otherwise there are whole regions where, you know, and specifically in countries, in small countries, where things are very intermixed, and you know, it's not our job to tell them how to run their organizations as long as they're user-controlled. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Tijani Benjamo.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. Yes, Alan, I understand your concern, but an organization or an association or a grouping can be funded, not completely funded, but can be helped by financial support from government. But it remains an end-user association or grouping. In this case, it is eligible. But for those who are fully funded by the government, so they are controlled by the government, and I don't think that they can defend the public interest inside at large. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. I think we are all understanding each other on this. So I don't want to extend the discussion.
Olivia, I'd like a comment on that.
So, Alan, go ahead and close the call.
Again, I think we have to judge it on the merits of the specific case. I know of plenty of organizations that subsist on government grants. That's where their money comes from, but they're not controlled by the government.
Yeah.
So I think you have to look at how an organization runs, and I don't think we can make global statements like that.
Thank you, Alan. I think that's what Tejani meant, that the control by the government, which is in opposition to control by the users.
Yes, but that's not the same as funding.
No.
Correct.
That's
yes.
True.
I see agreement from Carlton. Okay, I think that we can move on. And I guess that so far, the way that we've worked it out was working rather well. I can see many RALOs, maybe not many rejections of applications, but those applications that clearly did not respond to end users and were not controlled by end users were clearly pushed out of the way. So and we're told to go elsewhere. There might be other homes for them in ICANN. So anyway, let's move on now to the next part of our meeting, and that's agenda item number 5, where we have the reports. And I see here only 5 minutes allocated to this one. I think it might take a little bit more time, maybe 6 or 7. If we can just have reports from our GNSO liaison and our CCNSO liaison, and also our SVAC liaison. If we can start with the GNSO, please.
Thank you. Nothing that needs verbal report. There are 2 meeting reports, actually, on the Liaison Wiki site, because there was a special meeting yesterday to attempt to select ATRT endorser or do ATRT endorsements. I say attempt because they ended up not being able to do that. But you can read the details there. Nothing particularly startling. And there's a lot going on, but nothing, I think, that warrants spending time here right now.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. If you do remember anything else, I guess we're probably part of the discussions that we will have later on.
Yeah, there's a few things that will come up as we go along, but nothing that
okay.
Be highlighted right now.
Thank you. And now the report from the CCNSO liaison, Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for the transcript record. Like Alan, lots of little things going on, but of particular note in terms of interest for the ALAC is, and I think at the moment I'm just checking down, I don't believe Hong Shui is on the call. No, she isn't. The CCNSO Council, in its lists recently, has gathered its surveys for feedback for the ICANN Academy. So I know that is pending and forthcoming, so I think that's important to note. And I would like to think that the other ACs and SO feedback is coming in as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. I see nobody having put their hand up, so there are no questions so far on the GNSO or the CCNSO report. Then I'll ask Julie Hammer if she is ready to provide her SVAC, just a briefing on her SVAC report.
Thank you, Olivia. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Julie Hammer, for the record. I've just posted my January monthly report. We haven't had an SAC meeting in the last month, but the SAC activity report for the third and fourth quarters of 2012 was posted during this last period, and that contains a summary of the work plans and the activities of the SAC. Really over the last 12 months, and it also gives some details about the active work parties as we go into the new year. So I've included a link to that document in my liaison report and just a summary of the active work parties. That's about it.
Thank you very much, Julie. Very good. and thanks for all the hard work to all of our liaisons. The work they do in at large is only part of the iceberg of all of what goes on the other side in the other parts of ICANN. So it's really great to have them to know quickly what's going on in that part of the world. Just one thing. You will note, everyone will note that on their Adobe Connect screen, there is a link to the agenda, which is on a wiki page. Now, that agenda has the link that go over to the RALO and Liaisons wiki page under reports. It's just to let you know that that at-large reports from work groups, RALOs, and Liaisons is something I would really recommend everyone bookmarks. I often hear people are unable to find information, and that's one of the key pages. Being able to refer to these reports very quickly, bookmark them in your web browser, and you'll be able to jump directly to that. And I am mentioning the bookmarks because the next part of our agenda is going to look at the new business. And that's the items for a decision. But just before that, there is an NCSG liaison report, IBM liaison report, and, well, sadly, no .mobile liaison report anymore. But you can also consult those directly from that reports from workgroups, liaisons, and RALOs. You can also have access to the standing working groups, all of the pointers to those. So it's a very helpful thing indeed. And further, of course, further down, there are all the RALO reports, AFRALO, AP RALO, URALO, LAC RALO, and NOW RALO. I don't think we have enough time to go through all of the RALOs, but I do thank everyone who has submitted, all the secretaries who have submitted their RALO reports. Very important at local level for someone to find out what is going on locally. And Heidi has just quickly texted me that she is going to hound the RALOs and the liaisons to give their reports in time for any of them that has not. So thank you very much, Heidi. I paraphrased in a rather stronger way than what you said you're going to ask very nicely. Sorry. Okay, so moving on. The new business items for decision, policy advice development page. Now, this is another of these pages which are particularly interesting that you can bookmark. That provides details with all of the open statements and all of the closed statements underneath that. It's a wonderful wiki page. I would say that this is something which you can look at every couple of days to keep track of what's going on and where work is required. And so we can quickly go through the recently approved ALAC statements. And the first one was the Trademark Clearinghouse Straumann solution. There was a discussion, as some of you might know. Well, perhaps I should I just let Alan explain what the Straumann solution was? And Alan and Evan were involved in this specifically.
Okay, Olivier, I'm not going to go into the details. We've talked about it a number of times already. These are essentially they came out of a list of requests that the business constituency and IPC made in Toronto to ICANN staff. A meeting was held in Los Angeles, which we participated in remotely, which evolved some of these issues, and they became the straw man. Some are deemed to be implementation, and they will likely go ahead. Some are questionable. Staff has deemed them implementation. Others, including ALAC, have said they sound like policy to us, and it's not clear what's going to happen with those. And lastly, there are some which everyone agrees are policy issues. There was a significant discussion at the last GNSO meeting on this because the item was on their agenda also. It bears reading in my report, I think. The discussion started off with very much of a tone of GNSO is the policy organization for GTLDs. If the idea doesn't come from us, you know, no one else should be on our turf, and this whole thing is ridiculous, and we should tell them, you know, they didn't quite say it like that, but basically tell them where to go. By the time the discussion ended, they seemed to realize that the straw man concept is not necessarily at odds with a policy discussion, and is the start of it, and maybe they need to do some work on the items that are deemed to be policy. They can't just say, you know, it didn't come from us, we're not talking about it. And so I think things are heading in the right direction. It's still not clear exactly how this will proceed, but I think the relationship is between these kind of discussions is far more healthy than it might have been. It might have come out. There's an interesting parallel, and it's quite interesting. Someone from the registrar constituency or stakeholder group had said that, you know, basically the GNSO is the policy organization. This straw man is ridiculous. It didn't, you know, it's done the wrong way. However, the discussion that is going on right now between ICANN staff and the registrars on privacy and proxy services and how to, you know, essentially take those under the control of ICANN and accredit them or some process like that. And what they're coming out with now, they're calling a straw man. And everyone seems to agree that this will feed into a PDP. So once we started using the term, it's now being used somewhere else, and it's being used in a very healthy, in a very healthy manner. And I think I was the one who told the GNSO about this, because I had heard about it in another meeting, and I think that helped to focus on the fact that just because it's developed by a private group where not everyone is invited doesn't mean it can't have good ideas that merit discussion. So I think things are going better than they might have gone. It's still unclear what path is going to be followed to actually resolve these issues, though. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alan, for this summary and this follow-up beyond the response that we had provided regarding the Trademark Clearinghouse Strawman solution. The next one which was passed was the protection of IGO and INGO, so that's International Government Organization and International Non-Government Organization identifiers in all GTLDs. That's the famous Red Cross Olympic International Olympic Committee, RCIOC discussions which we had for a very long time and which did generate a lot of discussion in the past. So we had a statement that was drafted on this. Thank you very much to Alan and to Evan, who did the most of the work on this. There was a lot of input and also some serious input from input from Jovan Kovalica of the Diplo Foundation, someone who knows the ins and outs of IGOs, INGOs, etc. Very good statement, and I understand this was then taken by the GNSO working group that is working on this, and was quite well discussed. Or Alan or Evan, were you on this the call that took the input?
Yeah, I was on the call. As it turns out, the deadline was, I think, last Thursday or so, or a few days before the meeting, that was last Wednesday, and it turns out that ALAC was the only one who has submitted a statement on time. So since then, a few others have come in. So we were given the opportunity to I was given the opportunity to review it, and there was some discussion on it, including some good questions. You know, there's a fair amount of objection to some of the concepts we're putting forward, because we're saying that this cannot be purely objective, you know, mechanically derived, that if someone is going to get protections, they should apply for it and should have a good rationale, that we shouldn't be granting these kind of protections just based on some sort of status if there is no indication of any need. And I'm actually working on a little document to submit to the working group, which I'll, of course, share with ALAC, looking at some sample IGOs and you find that quite different IGOs and non-governmental organizations. There are IGOs that basically have registered their own .int name and have absolutely no defensive registrations at all, and the names are used by other people, but apparently they've decided that that's just fine. So, there are certainly examples that exist of why we shouldn't grant special protections for some IGOs, or at least that there's no evident need for it. And others, there clearly is a need. It's quite interesting. There are services around that will tell you how many domains are owned by the same email address that owns a particular one. So if you go to Microsoft.com and see how many other domains are registered to the same entity, you'll find it's about 450,000. Clearly a lot of defensive names, because they don't have 450,000 trademark names that they're registering uniquely. On the other hand, if you go to some other ones, you'll find that there's one or two or three. And they're very, very different situations, and they vary, heavily between them. So it's an interesting world we're in. It's not clear how this is going to unwind. The registries have come out with a statement basically saying, keep the IOC and Red Cross ones that were recommended on an interim basis, which I think in my mind translates to, let's not fight with the GAC over this, is not worth it, and offer no other protections. So we're seeing some very extreme ends to the spectrum. It's not at all clear how this is going to unfold. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Evan Leibovich.
Thanks, Olivier. Alan, I'm sorry I wasn't able to make the last meeting, but I'm curious to know of one reaction to a particular point that ALAC perhaps uniquely has raised, and that is that there are non-treaty organizations such as Oxfam and Médecins Sans Frontières that in our belief are actually more deserving of protection than the INGOs that are asking for it. Was there any comment on that? Because this is a concept I don't know has been raised within this group.
I'm
curious to know what kind of reaction.
It has been raised by others, at least one other person, who has pointed out that the wording in the charter, and it came right out of the issue report, it talks about international non-governmental organizations that are protected by treaty and national law. And first of all, it's not clear whether it's treaty and or national law. Is it one or the other or both? And the implication from the history of the Red Cross and IOC is it's both. And she's pointed out correctly that there probably are no other organizations in the world other than the IOC and the Red Cross that meet that criteria. And do we really want to limit it to that narrow a scope, or do we want to have, offer some level of protection, if we're going to offer any protection at all, to other organizations? And, the kind we're talking about are the examples. So we're not unique. There's not an awful lot of support. It's clear that there are potentially tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of international non-governmental organizations of various sorts, and people in general are reluctant to, certainly to opening it up to all of them, and don't want to have to make judgment calls to decide which are worthy and which are not. The whole concept of worthiness is very objectionable to some people, partly because of the effort and work involved, and partly because they may exclude them if we start measuring worthiness. So we're not unique. It wasn't discussed a lot in the context of our paper. It has already been discussed a fair amount in the context of exactly what INGOs are we talking about. Is it just the two, or is it a wider group? And the wider group almost surely implies non-treaty-based. So that's completely unresolved. I suspect the group will end up taking the easy way out and say, let's not make our job more complicated and add more groups and subjective criteria into it. But we'll see where it goes.
Thank you very much, Alan, and I'd like to move on. I think we've gone through a good review of these two. So now the ALAC démarche to ICANN, I touched on a little bit earlier and mentioning that the email was actually sent to Fadi Shahadeh. I actually checked, and you know, it was sent to the chair of the ICANN board with a copy to the ICANN CEO and also a copy to Sébastien Bachonnet, the chair of the Public Participation Committee. We have received no official reply yet. Sébastien, who was online, do you have anything that you can add since you were one of the recipients?
Hello. Yeah, I can add that it's on our agenda for the PPC meeting on the 31st of January, and it will be also discussed on some meetings about specifically on Beijing issue, and I will check with the chair of the board where and how we can handle that. But as we have a retreat, the 1st and the 2nd of February, we will take care of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sébastien. So now we are looking at the statements currently being developed, reviewed, or voted on by the ALAC. The first one is the IDN variant TLD program, the procedure to develop and maintain the label generation rules for the root zone in respect of iDNA labels. And that's the second public comment draft. You will note I'm speaking slowly specifically on this because I think the interpreters might be having problems if I go through this at full speed. The ALAC is voting on this statement, and I have to thank Edmund Chung and Rinalia Abdul-Rahim for their hard work with the IDN working group to have drafted this. There have been a lot of IDN statements recently because there's been a lot of work with respect to IDN. So really, really great. Next, the statement on the WCIT outcomes.
Olivia, this is Heidi. If I could just add...
Yes, Heidi, please go ahead.
Yes, sorry to interrupt without putting my hand up, but I've just seen that Rinalia is not on the call. She has asked that if there is interest by the at-large community when an IDN, a major IDN public comment comes up, that an IDN or working group webinar be scheduled to allow staff or other experts on the IDN to explain that public comment, so it will help at large in the development of their statements. So that's a new development. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Heidi. And of course, you know, when one mentions IDNs, one often thinks the Chinese, the Korean scripts, the Japanese scripts. But in fact, the IDNs are also scripts that would actually include accents on the you know, accents on the E's and A's, and there are many, many different scripts that are considered IDNs. Anything that is not standard A to Z script without the accents is considered an IDN. So, you know, there's also Greek script and Cyrillic script. So lots of interest in this, I'm sure, and lots of movement going on. So that's noted then. So then we can move the statement on the WCIT outcomes. I've just mentioned that their statement will be forthcoming from myself. The report on the GNSO Working Group on Consumer Trust, Consumer Choice, and Competition. Evan has kindly drafted a first draft on this. I will work with him to make a few amendments, and I expect that within the next few days, we will have something that will be ready to go out for voting and to be able to send a statement out. Next, the SIC HUI's TDP working group, and the ALAC is voting on this as well. And I also have to thank everyone who was involved in drafting this. I know that Alan was the main person who held the pen, but there was, again, a lot of input on anything to do with Sick Who is something that becomes highly discussed by a lot of people. And, of course, we have a working group as well. So that's really great. Any comments or questions on any of these? I see no one putting their hand up, so let's move on to the
Alan put his hand up, but slowly.
Alan was too slow in putting his hand up, but I'll let Alan speak. Go ahead,
okay.
Alan.
Input is feeding into the Think Who Is group from other stakeholder groups and individuals, and it's interesting. There is a potentially huge battle on the privacy issue. The NCUC, as can be expected, and I think I forwarded these statements to the ALAC. The NCUC has an extensive answer on why privacy should let everything lie with Thin Who Is, and the VeriSign, in fact, has come up with a statement somewhere sort of similar to it, although a lot sparser. And I'm having an awful lot of difficulty understanding why having a domain who is information moved to a company in the U.S. makes it any more publicly available than a rule from ICANN saying the registrar in whatever country it originally was in must make it publicly available, and that database is echoed and copied and mined extensively so that there are copies available in many other places. I really don't understand why it's more accessible. If there's anyone on this call or anyone else who understands why, I really would like to know. But it looks like there's going to be an interesting discussion going on there. Thank you.
And Alan, just quickly, as a quick reminder for those people who are not well-versed in what Thick and Thin Who Is are, what is the difference between Thick and Thin Who Is?
I hope there aren't too many of those people, since we're voting on a statement on that right now, that I would like to think people understand.
I'm talking about some of the observers here.
Thin Who Is, and currently the only there's only a few TLDs, but they include .com and .net. The bulk of
.net is no more.
The bulk of the registrant data is kept solely at the registrar. In a Thin Who Is, all of that data that is typically visible in a Who is moved, is copied to the registry, and the registry is the distributor of that information.
You meant to say Thick Who Is, Alan, in the last sentence.
I'm sorry. A Thick Who Is, the registry has the bulk of the data. The registrar likely still has a copy, but the registry is the official repository of it. In a Thin Who Is,
it's the
essentially, the only information the registry keeps is when does the name expire and who is the registrar. There's a few other bits of information.
Thank you very much, Alan.
All new registries are thin, are thick, rather.
Maybe we should use another term for these. But the corrections, by the way, for the transcript, the corrections came from Carson Samuel. But first, we have Fatima Cambronero. Please, you have the floor, Fatima.
Thank you very much, Olivier. I am Fatima for the records. I would like to ask a question more than a comment. I was following the discussion regarding the list, and I see that a very interesting issue is the Who Is issue, but this is a topic which is not quite clear. So my question is there any possibility to have a webinar regarding this issue? That's my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Fatima. And actually, we can
ask answer?
The chair of the Who Is working group. Chair, and that's Carlton Samuels, who just happens to have his hand up. Go ahead, Carlton.
Thank you, Olivia. This is Carlton for the record. Yes, Fatima, we have had the webinars on OIS before, but we'd be happy to put on another one. We are going to have a meeting at Beijing, and we intend to, we can use that as a basis to bring in some OIS experts to say what the issues are. What we've done is that I've been deliberate about this, is to make entries on the list that is provocative, that will allow people to say, well, you see rehashing of most of the positions, but you also see nuances developing. One of the nuances is the issue of the privacy and how you get around that. Let me tell you what the real key issue is this. The current policy says that WHOIS data, and this is a very circumscribed bits and pieces of information about a registrant, must be publicly available to Internet users. And it says you must put it on a website or you could have it by port 43 entry. I mean, those are details. The U.S. government, and as part of the affirmation of commitment, specifically requires that aspect of WHOIS is observed by ICANN. There are people who believe that to fulfill that obligation is a diminution, reduces the privacy rights of people, registrants. And when you have a thick WHOIS, and remember now, Alan has told you that the two thin WHOIS, the two large thin WHOIS registries are the NET and COM, which have the bulk of registrations. The fact that they are US-based and the fact that they would be then, if they are made to become thick, they would be subject to the general policy positions of the U.S. government. And that is why some people think it is a real problem for those to migrate to the thick WHOIS model. That's one of the things you're seeing there, this fear, that if the thick WHOIS PDP then agrees that all registries should be thick, then the two registries with the bulk of registrations would then become thick, and therefore, because they are largely located in the United States of America, they would be subject to the public interest perspective of the United States government. That is one of the major things. In the discussions so far, you will see that there is some movement from the major proponents of privacy to say, well, yes, you can retain the right of end users to access the WHOIS data, but with certain safeguards. And that is where this argument seems to be moving. Yes, you have to be registered. You have to be willing to say who you are and why you need it, et cetera, et cetera. So we are seeing some movement, not in the whole group, but certainly on some of the major proponents of privacy, absolute privacy, in other words, that, yes, it is. I suspect they are beginning to understand that you will not get through this process with an absolute privacy requirement. That is to say, users, end users, should not have access to WHOIS data. And what I think is emerging is the reality check that you probably will not have a 180-degree change in the policy perspective from the United States government.
Thank you very much, Carlton, and thank you for this long intervention on who is clearly a very, very interesting subject indeed. It touches on privacy, it touches on
on a lot of different things, and there are many different views around who is. I don't wish to turn the ALAC call into a who is discussion. I think there is enough interest in the community, and I have to thank Fatima for even popping the question from this. There's enough lack of knowledge, perhaps sort of in-depth knowledge, in many parts of the world, that it would be really good to have a Who Is webinar, not only as a webinar, but perhaps having people take part from the at-large community that have vastly different views and different points of view on this. I can see that Avery mentioned it doesn't only Fake Who Is does not only diminish the privacy, it also increases the danger in some case. I can see Garth Bruin mentioning another point of view with regards to the workload and obligations of the registry. It seems to be quite an extensive subject, and a webinar will be really helpful. I still have Alan and Tijani in the queue. I'll close the queue after Tijani. So Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you. Just a very quick statement. I think it's really important that we try to separate the issues. There are some very real and very significant and very and possibly very difficult privacy issues associated with Who Is. You know, when Who Is was designed decades ago, they weren't considered. They're relevant now, and they're going to have to be addressed if ICANN is ever to get out of this jungle that it's in right now. It is less clear, and there are very different opinions, whether these privacy issues change between thick and thin. So I think it's important to try, to the extent possible, to separate them and not merge the two arguments together. You know, the discussions that have been happening on the at-large list over the last few days are very much Who Is discussions, and you can see there are many different positions. They're not necessarily thick and thin Who Is, although there's some difference on that also. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Alan. I also note that there many other parts of ICANN that have discussed this, and that there was an ESSAC report also about Who Is. There is some discussion also going on the technical side of things. It really touches a very wide range of things, and I hope that we can have a webinar that will touch on those. That might be an hour or even an hour and a half long, since the subject is so wide and so complex. Tijani Benjema.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. If you think there is a lack of knowledge about Who Is, I think it is a very good subject for the capacity building working group to put in its pipe. So as an action item, I propose to send to the working group the request of ALAC to put in its pipe the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. So I didn't understand your last sentence. Did staff catch this?
Olivia, this is Heidi. Yes, I caught that.
I said... Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Now, I'll have to read the action item from staff then, because I didn't catch it. Sorry. Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Tijani. And so we'll move on then to the currently open public comments. I didn't think we were going to speak so much, but I guess that we had important matters to discuss. A few statements still in the pipeline at the moment. First, the consultation on the IANA secure notification process. The comment period started has been extended to the 28th of February. So far, we have decided there would be no statement on this. It's a highly technical thing. If anyone thinks that you should have a statement, you're very welcome to either put your hand up now or type into the chat. Otherwise, the next one is the at-large white paper on the future challenges entitled Making ICANN Relevant, Responsive, and Respected. That was, of course, the R3 paper. The initial comment period closed on the 11th of January, and the reply period will close on the 1st of February. Past that time, the Future Challenges Working Group will be looking at the responses and will proceed forward. Evan, just a couple of words. What are your plans after this?
Thanks, Olivia. This is Evan. Right now, Jean-Jacques and I are going to be working to coalesce the various responses and producing a reply to them. In some cases, I can see how this may actually lead to perhaps some changes in the document itself, which will be brought back to the Future Challenges Working Group. It won't be arbitrarily done by Jean-Jacques and myself. But at the same time, there are a couple of comments that we saw that will probably not be leading to changes in the document, but at least will provoke a response from the working group, at least to explain why we did not implement them. Right now, the work on that is ongoing at this time. There will not be any challenges made, other than challenges. There will not be any changes to the document itself made without the full consent of the working group. Because that was approved by AILAC, any modifications like that will be coming back here. But right now, we're in the process of seeing what, if any, changes need to be made in light of the responses we received. One thing that we are planning is to have a workshop on the R3 paper in Beijing. There will not be a formal meeting of the Future Challenges Working Group in Beijing. However, we will be running an open ICANN workshop on the document. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Evan. So next we have the .cat cross-ownership removal request. And there was, the reply period closes on the 11th of February 2013. The comment period closed yesterday. No statement so far, and I haven't heard anyone jumping up and down in the past few weeks for this to have a statement. The next one, the amendments to Article 6, Section 2.3 of the ICANN bylaws. And that is the DNS Root Server System Advisory Committee, the RSSAC, are looking at changing something in their bylaws. The AILAC is currently considering a statement. I wonder, would anyone be able to speak on this who is aware of RSSAC? I'm not sure if Julie Hammer has had a look at this or whether Alan Greenberg can help us out. Anyone that is closer to RSSAC than any of us?
I have not, Alan.
Okay, thank you, Alan. So perhaps...
Julie here. I haven't either, Olivier.
You haven't. Oh, okay, that's okay. We can quickly have a look. Effectively, it is just something that changes in their bylaws. In the past, we have not, except in exceptional circumstances, we have not looked too closely at bylaw changes or commented on bylaw changes elsewhere, except when we were in support. No doubt there is a valid reason for these bylaws to be changed. Our knowledge of the RSSAC, as I can see here, is not as great as it could be, or at least as the members of our RSSAC are. But I see Sébastien has his hand up. Maybe Sébastien Bachelet can help us out.
Hey, Sébastien, I may try, at least. It's really, summarize the situation, it's to align the RSSAC to how the SSAC is working, and to allow, for example, to have a period of participation that the chair is not the chair for indefinitely, and some other small thing. If you want the main idea, it's to align that, and we are obliged to do that within the bylaw, because currently it's within the bylaw, but in our mind it will be better to go to another document than to change the bylaw each 2 days, because we have to change a little thing in the working of one ASO and AC. That's also something we will work on in the future, is to have a shorter bylaws with main items and ideas to run ICANN, but not each and every AC and ASO within this document. I hope it will be coming soon and that it will allow less change in the bylaw itself. But about the AIRSAC, it's really to allow a better view on how it's organized, who is in charge of for a long time. It's the goal of these bylaw changes. Thank you.
Thank you very
and
much.
I say that on, as a member of the Structural Improvement Committee, who were a member of the subgroup to discuss with the current member of the AIRSAC to evolve that. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Sebastian. That's very helpful. And certainly any improvements to the system and to how things work is always something that is welcomed by this community. So I don't think there would be an objection, any objection in this community to RSSAC improving itself. So we can then move to the next one, which is the preliminary issue report on the translation and transliteration of contact information. Now, this one is interesting. It's it is a preliminary issue report, so it is a very early, something that's coming very early on, and it's to do with, as it says, translation and transliteration of contact information. Any comments on this for the time being? Must say, I have not got very much knowledge on this. I read through it, and I didn't think that something specific was necessary since we are so early on. Does anyone think otherwise? So I see no one putting their hand up. I gather that at this point in time, we can decide that there would be the ALAC would not be making a statement. Okay, thank you. Next, the consultation on the GTLD delegation and re-delegation performance standards, and the consultation on the CCTLD delegation and re-delegation performance standards. Now, these two are effectively using the same language, but one relating to the generic TLDs and one to the country code TLDs. There has been a discussion on the XCOM call last week, and both Cheryl Langdonor and Alan Greenberg have announced that they would then prepare a draft joint statement, since the issues are similar, and one is our CTNSO liaison and one is our GNSO liaison. Do any of the two of you wish to just explain quickly what is at stake on this?
Well, Cheryl here. I'm rebooting my computer, so I'm not in the room to put up my hand. Very, very briefly, these issues are extremely important for internet end users and local internet communities. I think it's important that, as I presented and Alan and I agreed in the executive committee meeting, that we do make a comment. I doubt that it will be of a particularly novel or substantial focus, but we do need to make sure that things, for example, on the questions being raised in these two separate but identically worded inquiries are answered, and issues such as key performance indicators for IANA on these delegations and redelegations, if we are to be assured, for example, that the internet end user and internet community in any particular area that's being affected, be it a G-space or a CCTLD, has sufficient time to have been properly informed, and whatever community interaction and opinion being sought from that community to happen, then, for example, a 60-day IANA time may or indeed may not be suitable. So we need to look at the performance indicators that are being set are ones that actually reflect internet end users' best interests, or should I also suggest the public interest as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for this summary, and we look forward to seeing the first draft of this statement. Next is the IBN variant TLD program. Yes, more internationalized than they name. Draft final report examining the user experience implications of active variant IDN, active variant TLDs. The comment period closed on the 8th of February. The reply period will close on the 1st of March. We have asked the IBN working group whether there will be a statement on this. I cannot see Renalia in the list, nor can I see Edmund Chung, unfortunately. Is anyone aware of any of the working? I think we'll just have to keep this one to the side for the time being. But I believe that there will be a statement that will be drafted on this. So any questions or comments on any of our comments that we're responding to? Just a quick reminder, one thing I'm a little concerned about, I have seen many statements drafted by Alan, and well done to Alan for having done all the work, but really this is a joint effort from everyone, and I would really like to see more ALAC members and even non-ALAC members hold the pen in those statements. It's really important that we get a diversity of main authors in addition to having a diversity of views that comes in. Please, I do hope that there will be more volunteers in future calls when we do have some wave of comments that are required. It always comes in as a wave, usually just before an ICANN meeting, so things will get hotter as we reach Beijing. And at that point, I think it will be absolutely both unfair and impossible for one person to hold many, many different pens for many different statements. But I do have to thank Alan very much for the work that he has done here in the past month during the holiday period where many people were unavailable. And I do also have to thank Evan for having been able to both tour around India but the work he's done while he was away, he was still able to remain in touch and cope with things back in the ALAC world. Did I just see, welcome Renalia here. Has Renalia just made it? Yes, she has. Renalia, I'm not sure if you can hear us. We just touched on the IDN variant TLD program. Draft final report examining the user experience implications of active variant TLDs. Will the IDN working group be drafting a comment? And the response from Inalia, she needs to consult Edmund. He's a lead on that one. Okay, so we will wait for Edmund Cho's reply on this. Right, thank you. Let's go to the items for discussion. And the first one, agenda item number 7, is the post-WCIT discussion, moving forward with at large. We had a webinar that took place last week, and everyone was invited. We had an excellent turnout for this. Heidi, how many people did we have in the webinar in total?
This is Heidi. We had 39, which is a new total. I'm going to check those figures, but I believe that is correct.
39 attendees, an excellent panel, and I have to thank all of the panelists. For those of you who were not able to attend, the recording is available. I think it has been it has been publicized everywhere, and I believe there is also a transcript that will be available very soon. Very interesting webinar. Now we need to think about what we do next. And one of the things which I mentioned earlier and which I will do is to provide my point of view on or some of the insider discussions that took place whilst we were behind closed doors and effectively where the really sticky points were. And one of the things which I have noticed, well, there are two main things I have noticed. The first one is that several of our ATMAR structures were involved both on the ground in Dubai, but also with their own governments back home, and where, and not only their governments, but also with their own communities back home. And so this ability to act locally is a real force that we need to make sure we tap into and that we make use of. And I think it's a real force that has been recognized already by Sally Costerton, who is the new Vice President for Stakeholder Engagement. I have had a meeting with her in London last week, or was it the week before last week, sorry, 2 weeks ago. We had a long discussion, and there certainly is going to be a lot of things that I can, have to do. But there's also going to be some involvement from our community. We need to be prepared for this. A number of things that I'd like to put on the table with regards to moving forward with at large. The first one is that of local community engagement worldwide. It was quite clear that the local community is not only the civil society sector, but we're also speaking about governments, we are speaking about all of the actors, whether they are private sector or civil society or governments or non-governments as well. All of these actors really have to have their hands held to bring them to the multi-stakeholder table. It's a real shame that when you speak about multi-stakeholderism, many organizations, many people in countries that support democracy and that support the internet believe that the current institutions are not doing the job that they should do to bring them to the table. I've had a number of people that have come to me between the sessions and have said, oh, we've heard you. You are the chair of the at-large advisory committee in ICANN, but you know we have tried getting involved in ICANN with no success whatsoever. We were pushed back. It's like an insider club, and I've heard this accusation a number of times. And really, it is up to our community to do the work to change this. We can change this both inside ICANN, and I do hope that our working groups will be able to present some work and some propositions to the Public Participation Committee and to the various parts of the boards that deal with stakeholder engagement, but also that our ELSs will be able to work on the ground to engage their local stakeholders. And for this, we really need to have some renewed work with the outreach working group. And this is getting, I think it is the right time to really start pushing on this. Also, the inreach is very important, capacity building. And I can hear Tijani already putting his hands up going, yes, capacity building, and many, actually. We really have to take this seriously. I believe that this is going to be taken seriously at ICANN-wide level, but the work that we have done so far on a shoestring budget has been recognized and it has already shown, thanks to the events that have taken place in Dubai, has already shown to really help. So we do have the knowledge that is required for capacity building, and our general assemblies and local work, such as the showcase and all of the work that has taken place in our regions and our railroads, so in Dakar, in Costa Rica, in Toronto, and that's going to also take place in Beijing, is something which is knowledge that we've now put in, and we need to finalize this and put this into some kind of documents and knowledge management and let other parts of ICANN also learn about this. So I'd like to open the floor for a brief discussion on this, because we have on the one side, we have the ICANN, for capacity building, we have the ICANN Academy working group that's working on things, and then we also have the effort that that Salah is leading, and of course the work from Tejani, who is co-chairing the capacity building. Where do we go from here, and how do we basically take the first step into moving forward with and engaging the communities and bridging that digital gap that we have between those who understand the model, the multi-stakeholder model, and those that don't so far. Feedback required. I might have just rambled a little bit too long. Tijani Benchema, go ahead.
Thank you, Olivier. I don't agree with you when you said that people coming to ICANN and was pushed back. At least for AFRALO, it was never the case. At the contrary, we are always trying to find people and to bring them to ICANN. I think that this is not it's not a real thing, because everything is open in ICANN and in our RALUs. Everything is open. So everyone can see everything we are doing. And if someone come and try to be involved in one RALU as an ALS, for APRALU, for example, we rejected only two applications because they were more, more business groupment, and we thought that they cannot defend the public interest. Don't forget that at large is always defending the public interest. But all the others were either accepted or rejected because of other things, because they are not real, because there is lies inside the application, but. Most of them was accepted. On the other hand, everywhere we go, every fora we go, even if it is not supported by ICANN, we try to lobby for ICANN. We try to find other ALSs. So I think this is not... If someone say he was pushed back, please give him to us and let him tell us why he was pushed back. A second point regarding capacity building. You are absolutely right. We need a lot of effort in capacity building. And I think that now we have more or less a rational scheme of how we can do the capacity building in a good way. We have the capacity building working group who will identify the needs in capacity building in our community, in the at-large community, and will define also the trainees, the people who need the capacity building. This working group also will define the time, the best time for this capacity building, and the tools to be used. And then the academy will take over and the academy will design, will define a curriculum for this this piece of capacity building that will be done inside the ICANN Academy in the future. So I think in the future it will be very very well done. But now we still need to do capacity building outside the academy, because the academy is not yet ready to work. It is under construction, it's wrong. So now we need to continue to do the capacity building inside our community, as we did in Dakar, as we did in Costa Rica, etc., etc. And I think that the effort have to be supported by ALAC and by ICANN as a whole. It is very important. And I think that, for example, for AFRALO, we did the capacity building of Dakar, but we saw that we need a complementary part of the capacity building, and we decided to do it virtually. We are still working with the staff to define how it will be done and what are the pieces that need to be emphasized or highlighted in the future. So I think that it is an effort, an ongoing effort. We will never finish with it. If we want our community to be really involved in ICANN and participative in ICANN, we need to make the capacity building something really an ongoing issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. I totally entirely agree with what you've said. Just the first part, when you mentioned whether there was any criticism, the criticism was not aimed at large in particular. It was aimed at ICANN. And I think that part of it comes from the involvement or the reception that participants from developing countries get in some of the GNSO working groups or GNSO processes, and also maybe some other parts of ICANN, but definitely not in at large, where I know that this community here has been very welcoming of newcomers, and there's been a lot of work done to involve the community into the processes. We have Alan Greenberg and then Fatima Cambronero. So first, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Just very quickly. Yeah, I was going to comment on what you just did, that I thought your comments were aimed at ICANN in general, not necessarily at large. Although at large has been criticized similarly, not because we didn't welcome people, but because we talk in such jargon and such complex issues that you know, without the timely ability to tell people to educate people, that people get turned off. But I think generally it's an ICANN issue, not necessarily an at large issue, and it's not limited to people from developing countries. There are people from other organizations who have tried to get involved and, have not necessarily been treated well, when they start trying to get involved without being up to speed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. The next is Fatima Cambronero.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Fatima. Just a brief comment. I sort of do not agree what Tijani was saying in terms of the creation of capacity building and in the fact that we need lots of effort. I personally believe that in some cases we do not need that much money and time. We need just goodwill and and collaboration. So since Costa Rica, AFRALO, have been developing in all the our monthly calls the capacity building sessions. So we have been inviting, and we invited last year, members of different constituencies and members of different parts of the ICANN to come to our meetings and explain new issues. So this year we'll keep on working with this program. We launched a survey for the AFRALO members, for the members and staff, and be able to say who are able to speak about certain topics. So we don't need to go to ICANN and ask them for money, and we do not need to resort to foreign speakers, because we ourselves can train among ourselves. So I think that's a very important step forward in order to stop asking for money, and that is something we talked about with Natalie and Cecil. We know it is possible, and we are working on that. So that's my comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Fatima. And certainly, yes, this whole capacity building can be done on several levels. I must say, I have attended several of the Lacrallo monthly calls, and the capacity building part of the call was very, very interesting indeed. Just a few hours ago, you had invited Andres Piazza, who is working for LACNIC, to share his experiences, and certainly that also raises the interest in many members in during the RALO call, because it's something new. It's not only the usual discussion about RALO problems, and it just changes the nature of the call from being routine to being something that you really look forward to. And I hope that other RALOs will look at this very interesting suggestion, because I certainly have seen the interest in Lacrallo being raised thanks to these calls and thanks to these interventions. Very helpful indeed. Okay, I think we've gone around full circle on the post-WCIC moving forward with at large. The next step for this, of course, is for me to send that long report over, and we'll follow up next month on that. Next, we have the update from the selected at-large working groups with our working group chairs. Three selected groups today: the Rules of Procedure Working Group, chaired by Cheryl Langdonor, the new GTLD Review Group with Dev and Anthony Singh, and the ALAC Subcommittee on the ATRT2, that's the Accountability Transparency Review Team number 2. First, the Rules of Procedure Working Group, Cheryl Langdonor.
Thank you, Olivier. Cheryl, for the transcript record. A very brief but important update for the ALAC on our pathway towards completion, I'm calling it now, of the rules of procedure. And indeed, we need to remember that the work group is inclusive of other aspects of work, such as the metrics subcommittee as well. But let me speak specifically for the rules of procedure, which I'm sure all of the ALAC are waiting impatiently to get their hands on the draft. And I'm equally confident that they've bookmarked and have updates from pages that are regularly being worked on by the various drafting teams, she says, tongue in cheek, and that I won't have to do much in the way of introduction to the draft for their review when it comes to them, and that I am perhaps slightly less tongue in cheek. It may be, Olivier, that it would be appropriate to offer a specific short single-purpose teleconference, should the ALAC so desire, but that's something that we could arrange once they have the draft rules of procedure in their hands. We still intend to have it in your hands, dear ALAC, probably between now and the February meeting. My guess is closer to the February meeting, even though it was our intention to have it closer to the January meeting. And we are still aiming to have you discuss and interact and work with your work group for any conversation and creative and hopefully complimentary comments on the draft rules of procedure intersessionally. What I do need to update you on, however, are two particular matters, one of which will impinge on activities in Beijing, and one of which I would like to propose to you should impinge on ALAC and regional at large organisation, and more importantly at large structure activities between Beijing and the Durban meeting. We have one particular line, whole thing tracks around 22 words in the current drafting stage of the rules of procedure, which the drafting team has recently discussed in I'm just trying to get my E's and S's and V's in the right order. It's the ESDT, which is the appointments and elections, appointments and that particular drafting term. In Rule 27.7, that's the current number. It will probably be a different number when it comes to you in draft form. And 27.7 is the part of the election selections rules, which is focused on the ALAC and at-large selection of the board member to occupy seat 15 of the ICANN board. We have come to a particular point in the current draft of 27.7, which talks about what the definition of the electorate is. As you are all well aware, the electorate, thank you Alan, ESADT, is now in the chat. I obviously couldn't get my E's and S's and A's in the right order tonight. Then again, it is 3:36 in the morning. Particular definition of the electorate which we currently work on is the 15-person ALAC, and a vote being drawn and probably under normal circumstances being held by the chair or their designated delegate from each of the RALOs. I would like to ask the ALAC that they accept the rules of procedure with in their draft form for their consideration, with that particular part, the definition of the electorate in 27.7, as uncompleted work, that it is currently, as it is, the defined and community-established electorate, but that it takes on notice a need that has been discussed both in the long and indeed the short term for the community to have an opportunity to perhaps review and if needs be modify that definition. To that end, I'd be asking for you to accept your new rules of procedure as draft and hopefully accept them in their final form then. Adopt them knowing that they will immediately have a community review process begun on that particular and only that particular aspect of 27.7. There will be a number of other things that have to be going concomitant to that. For example, should the community decide to change that definition of electorate, then there are a couple of other parts of 27.7 that would be null and perhaps indeed declared void. But that is the sort of editorial thing that we would be able to do as we review that rule and any effects that a change in the definition of electorate would mean to it. The proposal that's currently on the table would be for the definition of the electorate for seat 15 to in some way, shape or form include the at-large structures. Now, assuming that after the appropriate and might I suggest very short as possible amount of time devoted to having this worked out in the community. It certainly should be put to bed before the Durban meeting, and I think ALAC has to accept that this is a priority issue for it, and you would probably be well advised to allow your existing Rules of Procedure work group with all of its drafting teams to bring its expertise together to assist you in that. That particular change in the definition of electorate would bring with it a number of other requirements. For example, one would immediately see the need to have the inevitable, but it would need to be brought up in time now to sooner rather than later, full and conclusive audit of the continuing suitability and standards for all of the at-large structures that have not been recently appointed. In other words, those of us like the Internet Society of Australia and many others who have been at-large structures under claims and statements of appropriateness that go well and truly before the formation of the regional large organisations. It's time that we would need to re-audit those and a process for a recheck and fair and equitable redo, I'll call it at the moment, of due diligence, etc. A little report card, for the want of a better word, on the at-large structures is probably going to have to be timed along with that. If that is the case, I've already raised with the AP RALO meeting today that we would have, as a region, no problem in becoming a pilot to run such a audit or re-accreditation process once that is developed. And that would have to be done across all of the regions under the control of the ALAC, obviously. But it would need to engage all the regions for that, and that we, as a region, AP RALO, would be able to put forward a suitable number, if not all, of our at-large structures to go through that as a pilot. That's a very long report. It is why I asked for time on the agenda. It's a heads up and watch this page. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for this very extensive report indeed. And I have to thank the Rules of Procedure Working Group and Working Teams for all of the work that they have done to reach this this level and this moment where the mammoth task of rewriting our rules of procedure is proceeding forward. With regards to the first point that you made, the discussion of the electorate for seat number 15, Article 27.7, I believe the suggestion that was made was that this should be discussed in a wider setting, perhaps even face-to-face. And my suggestion was to actually have some time set on the Sunday of our Beijing meeting to discuss this out in the open, have a frank face-to-face discussion on that, and to be able to reach consensus or find what direction we will take on this in Beijing. So I have asked Heidi, when building our timetables, which she will be able to speak to us about in a moment, that there should be some time allocated specifically to this point, since it is one which has already raised a lot of discussion on the call. With regards to the rest, with the rest of the rules of procedure and update them ASAP. Does anyone here at the moment on the call think this might be a bad idea? I guess I can ask for a consensus call on this. I don't see anyone putting their hand up believing that it's a bad idea, in which case we should move forward and having those rules of procedure updated ASAP with the provisions that you have made in your report. And I see here you're happy to do a Sunday 7th session.
So that's great. Tijani Benjamin.
Yes, Olivier. Do you mean that what I understood from your statement now is that the discussion will take place in Beijing and the adoption of the new rule of procedure will be later, isn't it?
No.
No,
if I may.
Tijani. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you. Excuse me, Cheryl, for the record. Tijani, what I am proposing is that the new rules of procedure go ahead as planned, that they accept, however, that as they approve the new rules of procedure, they are also immediately undertaking to review that one section, and that section, the electorate section out of 27.7, can begin its community discussion and review at the Beijing meeting.
So, Cheryl, the adoption of the new rule of procedure will not happen in Beijing?
Before Beijing. It should be well and truly done before Beijing.
I don't know why they cannot be adopted in Beijing in face-to-face meeting. All the ALAC people will be there.
They can, Tijani, they can be, but we are already behind in our schedule. We would be better to have all of the discussion of all of the rules done online and intersessionally, and you either accept them before or during the February ALAC meeting, and then just deal with the outstanding issue in Beijing, unless you're going to give me 9 hours in Beijing, which I don't think you'll be doing.
Tijani, any response?
No, I think my point of view is that in a face-to-face meeting, we will have all the ALAC members present. And it is better to vote when all the ALAC members are present. So we can vote. It is the discussion can take place before Beijing. And the adoption, the final adoption, the vote can be done in Beijing so that everyone will be there and will vote.
Okay, Tijani, Cheryl here. The timing of the vote is a matter for the ALAC chair. You're on the executive. You can advise him in any way you like. But the drafting teams will have finished their work and you, the ALAC, will have your rules of procedure for in a final form for discussion well before Beijing. I'm not answering any more on
you.
That.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Next is Alan Greenberg, and I want to move on. With the time is ticking, and we are still on time at the moment. I just want to give enough time to the new GTLD review group and the ALAC subcommittee on the ATRT2 as well. Alan?
No, I was just going to point out that our intent is to have the rules ready for approval by the ALAC by the end of February. My personal recommendation will be to that the ALAC very soon try to schedule a specific dedicated meeting for that purpose, a teleconference. If that fails for some reason, then yes, of course, it could be delayed, but it would be really nice to have those rules in place by Beijing and we can be operating under them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. I think, yes, that the concern is if we do not do our homework by Beijing, then we will waste. We might waste a whole day or a whole 3 or 4 hours in Beijing to discuss those things. I'm speaking here as we, the ALAC. The other concern is there might be some members that might not be able to make it to Beijing. So an online vote for these things is always a better thing because I've actually very rarely seen a unanimous 15-member decision at a meeting. There's always someone that has to run out or that is not able to make it to the meeting for various reasons, that is sometimes not even be able to make it into the country.
Yeah, Olivier, one more comment. There is a tendency also in face-to-face meetings that people defer having any discussion on the list and wait to the face-to-face meetings when they bring issues up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're in a position where we have to redraft things and can't approve it in a meeting like that. So I think it's going to be absolutely crucial that people actually read the documents, come up with any questions, do it online, and that we can resolve things and have a vote. If we in my mind, if we defer to Beijing, we will almost certainly in Beijing find there are things we then have to change and redraft. And these rules are important enough that we don't want to be drafting them on the fly in a meeting to try to approve at that same meeting. That's absolutely disastrous to ending up with rules which conflict with each other and things like that. So it's really going to be up to the people to do their work ahead of time.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, next we have Yaobi. Yaobi?
Yeah, I have been speaking. The it will be good normally to vote in Benin, but I definitely agree that we should plan to do the work before Beijing. So I think what we have from this meeting is that the link is sent to the meeting. So we have to find in the group, and then we have to maybe share information with our group so that more discussion can happen before the meeting. And from that, especially within the week, people or members with discussion, and then we can really. So my personal opinion that we may not need maybe 1.5 hours in Beijing. That one can talk to me. Thank you so much.
I've missed part of the last sentence of Yaobi, but I think that you agreed that the work should be done before Beijing. And
I was saying that we may not need a very... Yeah, speaking, I was saying that we may not need in that case when we are successful voting before Beijing, have a very long meeting in the rule of procedure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Yao. So the action item from this is that as soon as the Rules of Procedure Working Group provides its work to the ALAC, we will be giving maybe a week or 2 weeks for ALAC members to read through those, and then we will be convening a single purpose call for the ALAC to discuss those the work and those rules of procedure. And we can then take it from there onwards, whether we want to have a vote prior to Beijing or in Beijing or online. I think that gives us the most options as the ALAC. And I'm eager to move on. We only have 10 minutes until the end of this call. The new GTLD review group, Devon and Tilak Singh. Go ahead, Deb, if you are here.
Okay, thank you. This is Devon and Tilak Singh speaking. The new GTLD review group held a conference call on Monday, January 21st, 2013. Before that, with the new deadlines established by the new GTLD program, moving the objection period deadline to March 13, 2013. The review group has, of course, adjusted its timetable and had set a deadline of January 16, 2013 for at-large comments for consideration on limited public interest grounds or objection or community objection grounds. ICANN at-large staff has did a one-page PDF which earlier this month, and this was published around the 8th or 9th of January, and all the railroads were notified, and of course about, I think, at least two reminders to all the railroads as to the deadline for the 16th and so forth. Literally, I would say hours just before the deadline, there were several comments received. Comments were received by the GTLD review group and were posted to the new GTLD dashboard and I'll post the link in the chat. I see Heidi has done that already. Thank you. So we received comments on .amazon, .cba, .nyc, .patagonia. There was a comment by RJ Glass on multiple strings. And there was a comment on .Africa by Badouin Shroom. Hope I pronounced his surname correctly. There only been there's to date. There's only been like one comment on each of these that has been posted to the dashboard. So I encourage the at-large community to really, you know, discuss and leave the comments on the wiki pages. On the call on Monday, January 21st, regarding .Amazon, no limited public interest objection concerns were raised. The review group is continuing to review the comments to determine whether such comments meet the threshold for community objection grounds. Just to elaborate further on community objection grounds, the applicant guidebook, section 3.5.4, describes four tests that will enable the dispute resolution service provider panel to determine whether an objection on community grounds will be successful. So the review group will continue to review the comments to determine whether such comments meet that threshold. Regarding .CBA, there were no limited public interest objection concerns raised, and as CBA is an acronym which has multiple significance, the comment does not raise sufficient community objection concerns, so no formal drafting of an objection statement will be done. Regarding .NYC, no limited public interest objection concerns raised. The review group will continue to review the comments to determine whether such comments meet the threshold for community objection grounds. Also for .Patagonia, no limited public interest objection concerns raised, and the review group will review the comments to determine whether such comments meet the threshold for community objection grounds. With regard to the comments on multiple strings by RJ Glass, the comment was directed towards the new GTLD program. No concerns on limited public interest or community objections for a particular GTLD application were raised. So the GTLD review group acknowledges his comment and will bring it to the attention of the new GTLD working group for their consideration. Finally, regarding the comment on .Africa by Badouin, this comment was an expression of support for an applicant of the .Africa, and thus no limited public interest or community objection grounds were raised. Doodle for next GTLD review group conference call was planned for either Friday, January 25th, or Monday, January 28, 2013, to discuss the comments on the other three strings, .Amazon, .NYC, .Patagonia. So I think that concludes my update. Thanks.
Oof. Thank you very much, Dave, and thank you for the work of your committee that's doing an excellent amount of work. It's important because it's the first time at-large has an operational issue at hand. I note there has been some concern by some parts of the community, perhaps some applicants that were concerned that the ALAC would be objecting without any due process, and of course there is due process, and I'm very pleased to see how well it's being pursued and what the process is that has been all entirely built by this community. Alan Greenberg, briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. Something that we don't have to deliver at this point, but I think it makes sense to consider it as we're going through this process, is are there things that we believe sort of in our stomach or in our heart we should be objecting to, but they don't meet the criteria that's set out, either the criteria that's set out by ICANN for the formal objection rules, or the criteria that ALAC has set for how to handle these processes. Because this is a learning experience. There'll be a second round, and we really need to know, did we do this well? Not just did we follow all of our rules, but did we do it well and meeting the intent of the objection process, and did ICANN? You know, are the four objection grounds that they laid out not sufficient to really cover things that we should have been able to address in the objection process? So I think it's something that in parallel we need to be filing away notes so that when we come around for a second iteration, should that ever happen, you know, both at the ICANN level and the ALAC level, we can provide input into that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Okay, so this is a good review. Thank you, Dev. Just a takeaway from this, you are hoping that you will receive more comments from everyone on the remaining applications. .Amazon, .Patagonia, and .NYC, is that correct?
This is Dave, yes, indeed. Yeah, you can go to the new GTLC dashboard. I posted a link in the chat, and just comment on the various separate wiki pages that are linked from that dashboard. So, yes.
Okay, thank you, Dev. Next, the ALAC subcommittee on the APRT2, Rinalia Abdul-Rahim.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Rinalia for the transcript. Can you hear me?
There appears to be some echo at the moment. Go ahead, Rinalia.
Okay. There are four individuals who have applied as ALAC representatives to the ATRT2. They are Olivier Capin-Leblanc, Jean-Jacques Debrina, Alan Greenberg, and Daniel Reed, who is not ALAC member. The subcommittee has completed individual assessments of three out of four candidates, because Olivier is exempt, and tomorrow we will have our final interview to confirm the results, after which I will send our recommendations to the ALAC. And a ratification vote on the recommendations will have to come in immediately, because the results need to be conveyed to the ATRT2 team by the 28th of this month. Also, when I send out my message to the ALAC, the workspace will be updated, and Max is working on it right now, so that the ALAC members can review the application material submitted by all the candidates. That's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rinalia, and apologies to the interpretation channels for the lack of interpretation due to the static. Alan Greenberg, you have to put your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, since some of the applicants are ALAC members, does the ALAC consider it a conflict of interest for those members to vote? I think we should have a consistent position on that, so it's something we may want to think about before the vote is opened.
Thank you, Alan.
My personal feeling is that since the recommendation is coming from a group which does not include as voting members any of those candidates, it is reasonable to confirm the action, confirm the recommendation of this subgroup. But I think we should have a consistent position among the three candidates. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Carlton?
Thank you, Olivia. Carlton, for the record, I wanted to make that same suggestion from Alan. I wanted, because somebody raised it with me, and my personal view is the same as Alan, because the group that's recommending is not the one that is the candidates are part of. I think the vote should take place and they should not be excluded. I also wanted to put on record that Oksana in the chat raised the issue that she had applied for the ATRT2 as an independent expert. I'm not so sure if that is related to the issue that we're discussing, which is the ALAC endorsed candidates. And I wanted some, maybe from Rinalia, a clarification if she's seen that. Thanks.
Rinalia, can we have a clarification, please?
Certainly, Olivier. ALAC members who apply as independent experts do not fall under the purview of the subcommittee on endorsement of ALAC candidates, because the individuals who apply as independent experts are not considered as representatives of the ALAC 2TRT2s. It's a separate process altogether.
Thank you, Renalia. Next is Tijani.
Thank you, Olivier. If we consider that the ALAC members that are candidates for the ATRT2 have to vote, we have to do the same for all other kind of vote. I remember that Sébastien, when he was candidate, he didn't vote, and Uralo appointed someone else to vote instead of him. So we have to be consistent, and we have to do everything in the same way. We don't have to have deux poids deux mesures. I don't know how to tell it in English. We have to take the same rule for everything. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. The process is different, though. The process here is that the group itself would be making the choice of candidates. The only thing that the ALAC would do would be to ratify the choice of the working group. Whilst in the choice of seat 15, for example, the vote was actually done by the ALAC members. But there is a difference there. Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, since we have a rule that abstentions don't count as negatives, we can survive either way. I just think we should be consistent. I don't believe the board selection issue is a precedent. That's currently a bylaw-mandated rule. Normally, when we vote for chair or vote for liaisons or any of the other positions that ALAC votes for, we've never had a rule saying that the person must, anyone who's a candidate must abstain. And we've done lots of votes like that. So up until now, it's normally been a matter of conscience. Some people have chosen to abstain, some people have not. I just think in this particular one, we should have the three candidates doing the same thing just for consistency. But I don't think the board one is a precedent. It's under a different set of rules, which are different than any of other election rules, and it's an ICON bylaw mandated issue. Thank you. Certainly, our new rules of procedure have not added a new rule saying people cannot vote on any issue where they're a candidate.
Thank you, Alan. Tijani, is this okay with you?
Yes, no problem. I agree with Alan that the three candidates have to be treated in the same way. They have to do the same thing. This is very this is normal, I think, and it is a good thing that the rule is applied on all people in the same way. But I don't have a real problem with that. But I don't want ALAC to address issues not in the same way. That was my remark only. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tijani. And with this, we have just a few more minutes because we are over time now. It is 8 minutes past the hour. I think we're going to jump to agenda item number 9. Thank you very much for all your work, Renalia, as well, in this subcommittee on ATRT2. Excellent job. And thanks to Dev and to Cheryl for their work as well. Review of the at-large meeting schedule for the 46th ICANN meeting in Beijing. I just wish to go quickly through the schedule of ALAC and at-large meetings and also a quick update on the APRALO Beijing event. Heidi, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. This is Heidi for the record. So I put in the work space for all of the at-large meetings in Beijing that are currently scheduled. There are 23 at-large meetings, including the APRALO ALS meetings. So just very briefly, on Sunday, there is an introduction for the ALSs, 8 to 9. Then there's a full working session for the ALAC regional leaders and the ALSs, AP ALSs, AP RALO ALSs are welcome. during that session, there's going to be a working lunch for 90 minutes with the AP RALO ALSs to get to know them. And there will also be a 90-minute session in the afternoon on the Article 27 issue. Then if you click on to Monday, you'll see that there are some of the key meetings of the at-large taking place, including the white paper roundtable sponsored by the Future Challenges Working Group. There's also the AP RALO roundtable on the multi-stakeholder model. And in the evening, there will be the AP RALO showcase. Tuesday, there's the constituency day. It will remain, what I've heard, it will remain the same structure this time. It may change in the future. So there's currently scheduled a board meeting with the ALAC, 8:30 to 9:30, in addition to the joint sessions with AP, with the fellows, with AP RALO ALSs. There are also, just take a look, there's also the GA, the AP RALO GA on Tuesday afternoon. And on Tuesday during the afternoon, there are two-hour sessions of the ALAC policy discussions. And again, those agendas are to be set. So on Wednesday, in addition to the Joint Fellows AP RALO morning meetings on capacity building, there'll be a technology task force meeting. And that's just going to be a wiki and web training session. That's a request by AP RALO, but everyone is welcome. And there's going to be a WHO is working group and an at-large regional leadership meeting in the morning, and then in the afternoon, the traditional AFRALO-AFRICOM joint meeting, followed by the new GPLD working group, and finishing off with the at-large IDN working group for 90 minutes. Wednesday on Thursday, two meetings. It's the wrap-up session, 2 hours in the morning, and in the lunchtime, there's the AFRALO monthly meeting, and then on Friday, there is a three-hour XCOM scheduled this time, 9 to 12. And again, agenda is open right at this point. Thank you, Olivia.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Heidi, for this, well, just a few meetings we're having over in Beijing. Looks like a very, very busy week indeed already. And, of course, the agenda will continue developing as we reach closer to the meeting then. If any of you have any questions or comments on this, could you please just make it over to the ALAC list, and we'll be taking this discussion online. Now a quick update on the AP RALO Beijing events. Who is going to be able to speak to us about this?
Okay, so Renali is asking me to do that. Heidi? So again, there was a call of the organizing committee, my evening yesterday. I guess it was early morning for Cheryl and others in Asia. So again, there are going to be several meetings. We have 31 ALS, AP RALO ALSs coming to Beijing, including some new faces, new organizations. So this is going to be starting on Sunday. There'll be 1 hour for introduction to all ALSs. They'll be then asked to join either the ALAC working session on Sunday or some of the newcomer sessions on Monday. Then there's the, as I mentioned, on Monday afternoon, there's the AP RALO multi-stakeholder meeting. Discussions, the subjects are just about ready to be agreed to. In the evening, there'll be a two-hour AP RALO showcase, which it's going to be very similar to the summit fair that was held in 2009. Lots of tables and interesting material from those ALSs. Each morning, Monday through Thursday, the ALSs from AP RALO will be joining the fellows for their sessions and then asked to join the ALAC meetings as well. And then there's a GA, General Assembly for AP RALO on Tuesday evening, followed by a regular monthly meeting of AP RALO on Thursday. And I think that's it. And also there'll be some outreach activity taking place during the coffee breaks and lunch breaks as well. I think that's it, Olivia.
Thank you very much. Very exciting set of events, and we look forward to seeing them develop as well. And so now we've reached the end of our call. We just have the any other business part. So does anyone have any other business? I do have something to bring forward.
Okay, thank you.
You don't need to remind me, Heidi. It's still in my head. So here's the question. We have had a number of new at-large structures joining us recently, and it's great to see at least one representative from an at-large structure having survived the two-hour ALAC call. Well done, Winthrop. But other at-large structures might not be as persistent in being able to understand everything that is going on or trying to understand everything that is going on. And one of the suggestions was to make a number of calls, maybe two, so as to be able to accommodate the right time zones around the world. Two calls for our new at-large structures and for us to be able, and us as in many members, any volunteers that would be interested, to being able to share a bit of our knowledge and some background material about what is going on in at large, what is going on in ALAC, what is going on in ICANN, so as to soften the cliff that needs to be suddenly climbed by newly arrived at large structures. I could have probably said all of this in a sentence lasting 20 seconds, but I've taken a minute for it. So I just want to take the temperature of the room here as to what we think about this suggestion. I see the temperature of the room is either totally dead or or just wants to go. I don't see anyone objecting to this idea. What I suggest is that we will, I can ask staff for us to have a couple of calls within the next 3 weeks or so, and we'll take this offline and see who can attend and who can do their little part. Fantastic. Any other business? First time I hear absolute silence. I hope I'm not just speaking to myself. I see some people have lost audio. Okay, well, Heidi, you can still hear me?
Yes, I can. This is Heidi.
So if Heidi can hear me, that's fine. I can therefore mention thank you very much to everyone. Thanks to the interpreters. Thank you for having stayed an extra 15 minutes for us. Thank you to all staff, and thanks to all of you who have attended this call. It's been very, very positive, and this call is now adjourned. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Olivier.
Bye-bye.
And
bye-bye. Thank you.
For almost keeping us on time.
Almost, for the first time, yes. Yes, but we're cheating, aren't we? We're making those calls 2 hours long now.
That's fine. We're not going for three, though.
Thankfully.
Good call. Bye-bye.
So, take care, everyone. Thanks. Bye-bye.